Want to get to know the people who produce the food that you eat? This is the place. Step this way and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming. Everybody, and welcome to Rock and Roll Farming episode 16. I'm your host, Will Evans, and tonight I'm heading down to Ross on Wye in Herefordshire to talk to the one and only Ali Hunter Blair. Ali, how are you?
Hiya, Will, I'm very well, thank you. How are you keeping?
I'm not too bad at all. How's the harvest going, Ali?
Well, it's been a bit of a false start, really. We made a start on our neighbour's winter barley, and we've got all that off, so that's done, baled up, and looking tidy. And then we haven't actually had a go at anything else yet. So I keep driving around the county and seeing everyone else has had a nibble at rape here and there. But we are waiting at the moment, waiting for the weather to come right again.
Yeah, it's turned into another typical British harvest season, hasn't it? I'm afraid.
Does seem that way at the moment, but anyway, so it's still early. We're approaching the last week of July, aren't we? So yeah, we'd like to get into some rape this week, but I always go into early. My workman's on holiday this week. He's had the same week's holiday for the last 49 years, and he always goes away this week, and I always go combining and block the combine up because it's too early, and then he comes back and it all goes a lot better the week after. So maybe that's what I should just be patient, but it's not something I have in abundance.
why don't you go ahead and tell us a bit about the farm then, Ali? What have you got going on there?
Yeah, so we're 500 acres in Herefordshire. We rent the whole farm from the Duchy of Cornwall, and we are, I suppose, an old-fashioned mixed farm. We've got arable crops, which is probably the majority of our income is from the arable crops, and we're growing wheat, oilseed rape, barley, sugar beet, peas, and some soya this year for a bit of entertainment. And then we've got a flock of Easy Care sheep as well, Easy Care style sheep. Their mum sort of creation of Wiltshire Horn cross with Clean, cross with Beltex, cross with all sorts. So the idea was to get rid of the horns, increase the prolificity, and get rid of the wool as well. So seems to be going pretty well at the moment. So yeah, and then I took succession of tenancy from my father in 2012. Because we're on an old AHA, well, some of the land's on AHA and some's on FBT. So yeah, so I've been here for 5 years now, which is slightly terrifying.
Yeah, because you must have some pretty good soils down there. Must be very fertile.
It's light, very light, proper boys' ground, as everyone calls it. We drought out quite early on in the summer. That's always our problem, water retention. It's easy land. And then we've got about 350 acres on the top land that's sand. And then we've got some river land as well, which is the rest, which floods. So it depends what sort of mood you catch me in. I've either got the best land in the world. If it's a wet year, the sand is always very good because it drains well. But the flood, the riverland has flooded most of the winter. If it's a dry year, like it has been this year, the sand droughts out and the riverland stays green and keeps going a lot longer. So, yeah, best or worst of both worlds, depending on how positive I'm feeling at the time.
and you've recently got married, haven't you?
Yes, 2 months ago, apparently, which again seems to be sailing past. Yeah, we got married on 20th of May. Which was fantastic. People always say it's the best day of your life, and it's very cliche, but it was just an immense day, and just goes so fast. You spend quite a long time. We were engaged for about 18 months, so you spend quite a lot of time thinking about it, and then suddenly it all happens, and you're back at the hotel going, all right, so that happened then. Excellent. Hi wife, how are you? So yeah, no, it was amazing, absolutely amazing. And we weren't living together previously, just because of circumstance, not because of any sort of we won't live together before we get married thing. It was, and so actually, it's quite nice to not be living on my bonce anymore. I got a bit bored in my own company.
Yeah, okay.
And which probably explains one of the questions you're going to ask me a bit later on.
Well, yeah, yes, that's, I'm very excited to talk about that. But she's moved in the horses as well, hasn't she?
Yeah, that's right. So she's a riding instructor, freelance riding instructor. It's her profession. So she has moved in with the horses, and hopefully she's got a successful little business. She's based down in Hampshire. She's got a successful little business down there. So we're hoping to move that business up here. And we're having a few planning issues at the moment, but we'll get there in the end. We need to put in a riding arena, and we're just having some entertainment with the planners, but we will get there at some point.
So
absolutely. So looking forward to it. And another sort of enterprise onto the farm with a bit of diversification as well. So another stream of income, or hopefully that's the idea. Although I haven't seen many people making huge amounts of money with horses, but there's not many people making huge amounts of money with farming either, so we're both in the same boat.
Because you'd be in a good area for that down there, wouldn't you? Look, quite a lot of equestrian sort of not too far from there, isn't there? So
there's in theory the marketplace is here, so it should work quite nicely. And it's a very low input business model that she's got for herself from down in Hampshire. And there's also the option of some of her clients coming up here for sort of weekend intensive breaks and things like that. So, trying to keep the client base down there as well as growing a client base up here as well. So, it's an exciting sort of time at the moment. It's just a bit of logistics management, because all of her clients down there still want her. So she's down there sort of one day a week at the moment. Which is good, keeps the income coming in while she can build a client base up here. So very exciting.
Good. And so going back a bit then, you mentioned that you took on the tenancy of the farm at 25. That's a very young age to do that, isn't it?
Well, lucky, I suppose. I'm second litter, so my father had two children before me from a previous marriage. second litter. They weren't interested in the farm, and then dad married mum. And I came along, and then he suddenly thought, Christ, there might be somebody who actually does want to farm. So he was, he won't thank me for saying that, he was 75 in 2012. So that's sort of one of the reasons why I got it a bit earlier, because dad was a bit older, I suppose. And actually the Duchy were very good, because their normal quota is you've got to have an agricultural qualification of some description. You've got to have at least 10 years experience, and you need to be over 30 to take a tenancy. So they were very good in letting me take it on. But then, Prince Charles is a huge advocate of agriculture, and especially and young people in agriculture. So it was a really, really big opportunity for me, and something that I'm very grateful for them and for dad being able to step back as well, which is, I think, a huge challenge in agriculture in general. Farmers don't tend to retire. So and he's still very much active in the farm, but he's been brilliant at stepping back and allowing me to make my own mistakes and then telling me that I've made these mistakes. So he's excellent. He's excellent at offering advice, whether I want it or not.
Well, old dads do that, don't they? But yeah,
you wouldn't have absolutely, that, so. Absolutely. But it works really well, the partnership between the three of us.
Good, because it's not always an easy thing, is it? I mean, farming, it's a notoriously difficult thing, actually, isn't it? The succession on farming, whether that be from a business point of view or just from a personal point of view. I know you swapped houses with your parents, and that it's not. It's a difficult thing when they move out of a farmhouse where they've lived for a long time, isn't it? It can be. It doesn't always go smoothly, does it?
No, it's one of those. It's a slightly taboo subject, succession. And actually, I think that has changed in the last maybe 2 to 3 years. But previously, it's been a hugely taboo subject about succession. Farmers in general, a huge generalisation, aren't very good at talking about their feelings or talking about big decisions or things that are going to affect them. They're too busy worrying about the farm itself to actually worry about the future of the farm. Mm. And it's, I mean, something that's so important, especially as we see now, especially in the press, where you see obviously new entrants into agriculture is difficult.
Yeah.
And there's certain ways of doing it. I'm very, very lucky and would never say anything other than being hugely privileged to be able to take on a tenanted farm, especially at my age. But in general, you know, that there's hundreds of people that would bite my arm off to have the opportunity. Absolutely. That I've had.
Yeah.
And it's been really good for and dad's been brilliant at stepping back. And yeah, like I said, allowing me to sort of do my thing, but then he's also, you know, you can't look away from 50 years experience. You just can't. So he's a very, very good head to have to listen to, as is mum. And you know, the partnership is still between the three of us, and it still works really, really well. And yeah, I'm very, very lucky. I know there's a lot of people that can't work with their fathers or mothers, or would choose not to, or you know, dad's not ready to let go of the reins. So I am, yeah, very, very lucky indeed.
Yeah. And were you always going to farm? Were you one of these kids who 100% from when you were no higher than your dad's knee? Were you always going to be a farmer?
I think so. I had there was a brief opportunity of maybe potentially a rugby career, but that was fairly well swatted with a reoccurring shoulder injury. So that went down the pan. And then the other thing was computers. I've always been fascinated and really enjoyed computers and computer science and that sort of thing. So there was a couple of options as I was weighing everything up, but I think in the heart of hearts, I always knew that the farm is where I really wanted to be.
Yeah.
And you know, dad, mum and dad were both the same that before I decided what I was going to do, they both said, we've had our lives on the farm. If you don't want it, that's absolutely fine. We'll retire, go away somewhere else, let somebody else have a go. Yeah. So there's absolutely no pressure on you to take it, but it was just, yeah, I think it is. It's that thing, you walk around the farms from the moment you can walk, and it's just, it's home as well as a business. And it's,
yeah,
I think you can't help but be in love with it. And I know there's people that aren't, but yeah, I just walk outside, and it's one of those things that I wake up every day, and however, even to this morning when it's miserable and we should be combining and everything else, and you just sort of, you draw the curtains and go, this is great. I don't have to commute. I don't have to do anything like that. I love what I do every single day. There's days where I wish I wasn't doing it, but I love it. I still love it. There's never a day where I wake up and go, God, I wish I had an office job. I wish I was doing something else. I wish I wasn't. I've never, ever thought that I wish I wasn't on the farm. So I think, yeah, in answer, yeah, I think always going to be on the farm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think just from, I only know you from following you on Twitter and social media, and you can see that you've got a huge enthusiasm and passion for the, not only for your own farm, for the industry as a whole. I think that's, it's great to see. Great to see.
And I think, it's a fantastic, it is a fantastic industry, especially in Herefordshire as well. I mean, beating the Herefordshire drum, the diversity of the agriculture down here is, as well as other counties, but I think it's one of those counties that there must be more different things grown or produced in this county than probably anywhere else in the country. And it's just, it's a great place where there are opportunities. And I think just right. I'd happily beat the drum of British agriculture worldwide if I could. I would, advocate it as much as I possibly could. I just think it's a fantastic industry that we're lucky enough to be a part of, or to be a guardian of for our lifespan.
Yeah. And of course, one of the best things about being in Herefordshire is you're so close to Wales, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to have some downsides to living in Ross. There's not many. I tell you, I used to go. I went. I'll tell you a story. I went to school in Wales my entire life, from the age of seven. And we had a Welsh rugby coach, John Bevan, who used to play for.
You
played for Wales. Played for the Lions. Had the Lions scoring record. So he was our coach. And You know, and he was also the greatest try ever scored in the, by the Barbarians in the 60s or 70s, where with every player touched the ball except for John Bevan, who was on the wing. So he would never ever admit that it was the greatest try ever scored, because he was the only player. Gareth Edwards scored in the corner, and he was stood outside him and just never got the ball. But yeah, so the Six Nations every single year used to be an absolute nightmare, because it would be obviously on a Saturday or a Sunday. And that weekend would define how the rest of the term went, because if Wales won, you would never hear the end of it. And it was just a nightmare. Whereas if England won, there would be no mention of the rugby whatsoever for the rest of the term. You wouldn't hear a peep out of it. And you couldn't even rile a response. And either way, you knew at the first rugby session that you're going to be doing laps, because if Wales won, they were going to make you do laps anyway. And then if England won, you're going to do more laps. So, unfortunately, the proximity to Wales, but it was a hell of an atmosphere the day after the match, that's for sure.
I'm sure. So going back to the farm then, Ali, you seem to have, You've got all the advantages there. You've got a great sort of setup and great soil type, and you grow lots of different crops. You seem to be very keen to embrace new technologies and improve your efficiency on the farm. Is that something that's fair to say?
Yeah, technology. Yeah, one of the first computers back in the 70s or 80s or whenever it was, and he's got a photo of him holding it in the Telegraph, and I think it weighed about 200 kilos, and all it did was blink a green dot at him, and I think he had to program all his own programs and spreadsheets and everything else. So he's always been a huge advocate of technology, and being able to use it on the farm was sort of part and parcel. I mean, that's where I think the future is using technology in agriculture to improve our efficiency. And yeah, as you say, we've gone down that road. We went to RTK GPS about in 2014, and we immediately saw about a 7% decrease in our field sizes.
What's
terrifying.
What's RTK for people who might not know?
Oh yeah, so RTK is it's called real time kinetics. So it's the best correction signal that we can get at the moment. So what it means is that the GPS on our tractors is accurate to 2.5 centimeters. And when you refer that back, if for example, everyone that's listening, if they've got their mobile phone or their iPhone or whatever else, or their iPad, the GPS in your phone is roughly accurate to about 8 meters. So if you lost your phone, you'd be able to find it within 8 meters, which for a phone, absolutely fine. You know, you'd be able to see it within that distance.
Yeah.
The GPS on the tractor is accurate to 2.5 centimeters, which is effectively the size of a 50 pence piece, is the way I explain it.
It's incredible.
So that tractor will be incredible. And that tractor will be able to drive within that 2.5 centimeters, and it's repeatable infinitely. So another thing that your mobile phone would do is if you went back to the exact point where you were previously with your mobile phone, you'd still only be within about 10 meters, whereas the RTK GPS will get you to within a 50 pence piece of where you were previously. So it means that we can put our tram lines in the same place. So we're running down. We're not doing CTF because we plow. Controlled traffic farming. So we're not traveling the same wheel marks exactly, but we're putting our tram lines back in the same place. So hopefully it means that we're only running the wheels down one bit of the field every single year. And that means that our compaction is limited to that area, which hopefully improves the rest of the field. That's the plan. Run on as little of the field as we can to make the rest of it work better.
Yeah, okay. And there's obviously a lot of fuel savings involved in it as well, isn't there?
Yeah, and as soon as we put it on, so our fields on average got about 7% smaller, and that only equates to, so if you're going up and down, we had a 3 meter combination drill, so we were doing 8 passes, so it only equates to an 8 centimeter overlap over time, which I think it works out about 3% or something like that. It's not huge, it's a tiny amount really, and you'd be doing well to drive better than that. But the GPS has just totally testing. I think there's also a bit of aesthetics about it as well. You don't want to see gaps in a field, because we farm right next to the dual carriageway. No one ever wants to see a gap with a drilling thing, because everybody's about 10, I think it's 19,000 people a day go down that road. So yeah. There's enough people farming it. We never want to see a gap. But actually, an overlap is far more costly than a gap is.
Yeah.
And it takes a little bit of a mentality change to make that stick.
Yeah.
So we've implemented that quite heavily and put auto section control on sort of sprayer, which again has saved us, so that we're not overspraying, which it's improving our use of pesticides, which we try to limit anyway. The herbicide, fungicide, pesticide revolution that we had in the last sort of 30-40 years has been fantastic for us being able to grow crops, but in my honest opinion, I think we've been over reliant upon it.
Yeah.
And there's been a few issues that have come on the back of over reliance on herbicides, and now suddenly we're starting to lose them. And if we lose glyphosate, that'll be a huge detriment to British agriculture as a whole, in my opinion.
Mm.
On no science whatsoever, which I find very hard to make sense of. But there's other things, the other actives that we're losing. And whereas 20 years ago there was new chemicals coming onto the market very readily, now the manufacturers know full well that they haven't got a golden bullet. They haven't got anything else. So you've got to start looking at other methods to try and keep the farm sustainable. And that's the future. I've been very lucky to take over a farm from my father, and I very much want to be able to be in the position that if we're lucky enough to have children, have boys and girls that want to farm, then I want to be in the position that they in 30 years time can do exactly the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you've also going on from that, you've also, I know you've got a drone, haven't you? And I think you're sort of quite excited about the future potential for them in farming, aren't you?
Yeah, the drone was, I got a drone before everybody else got one. So I just like to point that out, everybody has a drone. I don't know, years ago, but, not that I'm bitter that everyone else can now have them. They're amazing. And realistically, when I bought it, it was a bit of a gimmick. What it used to do, the original one, the battery life was about 8 minutes, and you couldn't see what you were looking at with the GoPro bolted to you. I literally had GoPro gaffer tape to the bottom of it, in comparison to what they are now, where the battery life is nearly half an hour and you can fly as far as you want almost. But it's just that I think the overriding sense of it, and I mean, I'm very lucky again, Herefordshire has some beautiful views, and if you put a camera up to 200 feet, suddenly those views get even better.
Yeah.
And they take some amazing photos, but it's just that sense of, I don't think there's many humans that don't want to fly. That's that human thing of, God, it'd be lovely to be, you watch birds and just think, God, it'd be lovely to fly. So to get that image streamed straight back to your iPad is just, it gives you that sort of sense of flying, even though you're bolted firmly to the floor.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, it takes beautiful photos. And at the moment, unfortunately, that's all I'm really doing with it. Apart from mapping, we've been mapping our drains especially in dry years. 2014, 15 was a dry year. And I photographed each of our fields, and it showed every land drain, because there was green in where everything else was dying off. It was green where the roots of it had met the land drain. So I've managed to use that so that we know when our drains block, hopefully, because Dad's got some very good diagrams, but some of them are sort of 19 yards from the oak tree that doesn't exist anymore. So they're just giving us a bit more detail to that. I think there's a huge future with them. I mean, you see the better drones, they're going out and flying fields of cabbages, and they can tell the farmer exactly how far up the field he's going to need to be able to get his class A cabbages and how far he's going to need to get his class B cabbages. So you don't just have to keep going. They know that it can identify individual cabbages and then grade them whilst it's flying over, which I just think is incredible. The future of them, future of robotics in agriculture, I think is huge. I don't know if you've seen, there's a, I think it's called C.Run, which is a Canadian autonomous tractor that they launched last week, or this week, in fact.
Yeah.
And that thing looks incredible, absolutely incredible. And I like the fact that they haven't designed it to look like a tractor. They designed it to look like a piece of equipment that goes out and
And, you know, that's, I think, unfortunately, I mean, it raises some pretty big morality questions surrounding employment in agriculture. But I think there's I think that's where the future is for us as an industry. And whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, we could talk for hours about. But autonomous stuff is, I think, unfortunately, going to be the future of. It's just that constant accuracy of monotonous tasks that they can carry out 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating. So yeah, the drone's amazing. I still love it. I still love seeing the farm from that angle. I love taking photos with it. I have been doing some NDVI imagery, which is nitrogen, basically trying to find out where the good parts of the crop are and where the bad parts of the crop are. And I've been trying to get that onto our fertilizer spreader so that I can spread fertilizer again, trying to target our inputs at the moment. So we're targeting our phosphate, potash, and lime with variable rates, but we're not doing our nitrogen at the moment, just because I feel like satellite images are not quite up to date enough for what I want to be doing.
Okay.
But I'm having a few issues trying to get compatibility. So yeah, I still think there's a future for it. But at the moment, it's resigned to taking pretty photos.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen some of the stuff you've put on Twitter. I think it's really interesting. I think it's I think you do a great job with it, and I look forward to seeing how you progress with that on the farm over the coming years. Speaking of social media, there. I mean, do you think you seem to very much enjoy linking the two things about farming with the social media, and it's something you've obviously got a talent for. You've got a great personality, and people respond to that. It you must really enjoy that. I mean, it certainly comes across that you do.
I do now. I think is the way to describe it. We got involved in a Channel 4 documentary a while ago, and that was really when I started Twitter, because mainly I wanted to know what people were saying about me. And actually, I wish I'd never started, because there you put yourself out in front of an audience, which we knew we were doing. My reasoning for going on to it was I wanted to promote, which is what I want to do with my social media, really. I want to promote agriculture to the wider audience. Yeah. I want to promote the fact that there is another generation of farmers coming through, and it's nothing against the older generation. They've done a fantastic job, and they still continue to do a fantastic job. But I just, in my mind, we have lost a generation of telling or teaching the general public where their food comes from. And I think we've missed a generation of that. I think we've rested on our laurels a bit too much. I don't think we've self-publicized particularly well. And I think that we have missed a generation on that. And that's slightly terrifying, to be honest. It all comes back to a story. My friend of mine, he was a teacher in a secondary school in Oxfordshire. And he was teaching, he's a biology teacher, and he was teaching about food and where food comes from in his class. And he said to a group of children who were coming up for GCSE age, so 15, and he said, look, so right, where do eggs come from? And immediately one of the hands put their hands up and said, oh, well, mum gets them from Tesco's. And he said, oh, very good, hilarious, well done, very funny. So where do they actually come from? And that none of them in the class, this is a rural Oxfordshire, this isn't even in a city, had a clue that eggs came from chickens.
Well, none of them.
And
wow.
None of them.
That is absolutely
none of them in the class. There was only 15 in the class.
Yeah.
And this young lad, once he told him that eggs came from chickens, he couldn't believe it. I was absolutely flabbergasted by it. And that was just one of those things. I remember him telling me and just thinking,
wow.
what have we done wrong here?
Mm-hmm.
How have we got to this situation where children think that, you know, and I'm hoping it's a rarity rather than the norm, but it just hit me quite hard. You just think, how have we got to a situation where children believe that eggs come from Tesco?
Yeah.
And and not know the provenance of that. So that was the whole thing behind the TV program, is that I wanted to promote, and it was obviously Channel 4, and the first one was they sold it to us as a documentary involving young farmers making a go of things. They called it First Time Farmers, which was a stupid name, but that was the one that stuck. Because none of us were first-time farmers. You know, we're all very lucky to have farms and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And I think actually in the first series, they did a pretty good job of showing agriculture and showing that there is a whole new generation, and that farming is it's quite a cool thing to be involved in. You know, it's not just walking around in shit all day, excuse my language. But, there is, you might have to edit that bit out.
No,
muck all day, that's better. There's so much more to it, and they did a really good job of that. And I logged on to Twitter, being sort of masochistic and wanted to know what people were saying about me. And I regretted that instantaneously. It was watched by 1.25 million people. And whilst I appreciate that not everyone is going to like me, and I can fully cope with that, and I fully understand when people don't like me. I get it. I'm a bit irritating. But at the time, I was there going, why are these people saying these things about me? And they have no idea who I am. They've watched 15 minutes of me on television, and there's all these names going around and all these bits and bobs. And I was being abused left, right, and center on things like the farming forum and bits and bobs. And you're just there going,
the farming forum.
Right, okay.
The farming forums is good for that, isn't it?
It was just all over the place. And suddenly I was there, and you suddenly have gone from being like, in my head, I'd gone, what I'd wanted to do and what I wanted to achieve was to promote British agriculture to a wider audience. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I was there being slated for it left, right, and center. And it hit me really hard. It hit me a lot harder than I let on originally.
Yeah.
And it was just that. Yeah, it was a very strange thing. And actually, I wanted to respond to every single bit of criticism, and I was going to respond. And a bit on the farming forum, I wrote a really long, what I thought was quite well worded. And my now wife, my girlfriend at the time, she said to me, just sleep on it. Go to bed, sleep on it, wake up in the morning, and then see what you think. And actually, that was the best thing she ever said, because I woke up in the morning and went, you know what? People are entitled to their opinions, and that's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But their opinions don't have to matter to me. I've got my friends. I'm not out here to try and find more friends. I'm out here to try and tell a story.
Yeah.
And if people don't like it, that's absolutely fine. But it took me 24 hours and a lot longer to actually be happy with that. But yeah, if I hadn't had those 24 hours, I'd had some interesting responses that I was going to write back. But it was a very interesting few weeks. Just seeing Twitter can be a really horrible place at times, really horrible place. And you can get so in depth with it, and you can care so much about what people who don't know you think, that it's quite scary, actually. And I ended up taking a few weeks off it, just because I was so involved in it and everything that was being said. But now, for 4 years down the road, I have a totally different attitude to it. It is what it is. I find it very therapeutic. I really enjoy engaging with people. I love learning from people. I love watching people's lives on it. I love some of the honesty and some of the rubbish that you get on there. There's an equal mixture of both.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, for example, you know, I love your stories about your children. I think they're hilarious. Just what goes on in the real world. I just think it's hilarious. And you get all this other rubbish that comes out, and then you get all the Green Party going down. You just think, how are people allowed to spout this much nonsense? And then how do people to Billy people believe it? But yeah, I mean, I do it because I enjoy it. I enjoy engaging with people. I enjoy talking to people. It's one of the things that I really enjoy doing. I like to learn as well. And I think it's fascinating, some of the stuff that you see on there.
Yeah.
I think it's a weird place, though, because, like, obviously, you know, yourself, I think I know quite a lot about your life. However, I've never met you ever. And, you know, there's a chance that hopefully we'll meet at some point. But I feel I could probably go around your farm and know where most things are, and, you know, the daughters and everything else. And then suddenly, well, actually, we've never met. And it's one of those things I'll be talking in the pub to a load of Ross friends, chatting about something I'd seen on Twitter.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, so how do you know him or her? And you're like, Oh, I don't actually know them. I mean, we've been speaking on Twitter for the last 5 years, but I've never actually been within 300 miles of them. So
it's a really interesting point.
Anyway, sorry, I'm rambling.
No, you're not at all. It's a really interesting point, that, isn't it? Because I think we all feel the same. Really, you make friends on social media, and then, you know, I've met quite a few now, and as you say, hopefully we'll bump into each other one of these days. But you meet them, and it is a weird thing because you kind of know them, but you don't, as you say. I mean, I'm hoping to bump into a few
I found that especially because normally you get a Twitter avatar, so you see one person in a small image, but you build up like a mental image of how you think somebody's going to be, and then you meet them, and often they're totally different to how you think they would be, but not in a bad way. Just it's a bit like reading a book, isn't it? You create a character in your head, and then when you meet that person, or when there's a film adaptation, so you go, oh well, that's not what it looked like in my head, but okay, this is how we're going to work. But no, it's fascinating. I think it's a really good tool, because I think also there's the other side of farming is that it is long hours, and a lot of the time you spend on your own, especially with the arable stuff. You spend far too much time in your own company, sat in a tractor in a glass box, going up and down a field, with nobody else there. Yeah. Really, I mean, you could happily go out for 18 hours without speaking to anybody else.
Yeah.
So I think it's quite a nice outlet to be able to scroll through. I mean, I go through data like it's out of going out of existence, but it's just quite nice. It's quite nice to know that there's someone else out there as well. I think that's the other bit of it.
That's right. Well, I think you and I have quite a bit in common with that, because I certainly, by the time we've got through the summer, by the time we've got through harvesting, and then we've got through autumn cultivations, and I do hedge cutting as well, and I spend a lot of time on my own on the tractor, and I do start to go a bit Robert De Niro and Taxi Driver, and you know, you talking to me type thing. I do start to go a bit mental, but you are obviously a lot more creative with it than me, and I love your videos that you post on Twitter. Let It Go and Wrecking Ball. Honestly, the Wrecking Ball video, when you swing in on the rope, is the funniest thing I've ever seen on social media. And I mean that. You made so many people smile and laugh with that. It's, absolutely fantastic.
And now, because of you, it's going back around the Twitter world, because you've even tweeted it today. So, and then suddenly I just keep seeing more notifications coming through and more people. I don't know. I had an, yeah, it was obviously there's carpool karaoke, and then there was I'm sure you do the same, you just don't film it. You end up singing along in a tractor quite a lot, because there's nothing else, especially now that we've got this damn GPS. There is literally I'm a button pusher at times with some of the operations we're doing, I spent my life singing along, and I thought, oh well, it'd be quite fun to sing. And then obviously Frozen came out, and it was 2004, where it had been a wet harvest, and it had been miserable, and we were combining everything at 20%, and it was just, and you just thought, you know what, the world is a very, very serious place, and I'm singing anyway, so I might as well just film it and see what, the response for Frozen was just insane, ridiculous. Why I posted on social media, why my wife can't quite understand why. She can't decide whether she's proud of me for not caring what people think, or whether she thinks I have actually lost the plot. And I'm not sure. She doesn't quite, she flicks between the two. The Wrecking Ball one was even worse, but the Wrecking Ball one, it took a bit more time. And actually it was Mr. Vickerton, his daughter Elle's had sent in, she loved the Frozen one, had watched it many, many times, and she'd sent in a request for, there was three different songs, I can't remember the other one, the bottom request was Wrecking Ball. And I thought, you know what, there's something I could do then. I was waiting for oil feed rope lorries one day, and I thought, you know what, I can throw a rope over this beam and try. Anyway, the worst it was is I because obviously I filmed it myself. I had a tripod set up with my phone, as I hung the piece of the rope too high, so I jumped off this cymba onto this piece of rope just as Mum came driving in, and I was just swinging off this thing, and I couldn't get down because I'd hung it so high that I couldn't get off this log without it. I was going to do some serious damage to my nether region. I was just there hanging from this thing, going, "Ah, this is not gone well." And there were, and then yeah, it was. I don't know. It was. It's entertaining. You've got to be lighthearted, haven't you?
That's
the thing. There's so much serious stuff that goes on in the world, and if you can't have a laugh, and if you can't laugh at yourself, then you know there's something very wrong with you. I mean, you don't have to go to the extent of filming a Miley Cyrus video, of course. That is taking it probably a step too far, or maybe a giant leap too far. But it's just, yeah, I don't know. It's fun, and people seem to enjoy it, and that's the main thing for me, is that, you know, people do seem to enjoy it. I'm sure most people think I'm absolutely mad, and there's some people that are wondering what the hell I'm doing and whether I should see somebody. But yeah, I don't know. I just, it's quite, and I actually watched that Wrecking Ball back today after you tweeted it and went, "What were you thinking?" I'm really hoping I never lose the farm, because if I lose the farm and have to get a job, a quick Google of my name is not going to be favourable. It's not going to be favourable.
I don't know. I think you'd be surprised. I mean, I can't wait to see what you've got planned for this year. This year's Combine Karaoke.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been looking after, so my wife's been away this weekend, so I've been looking after the horses, and I was there going, get these two involved, but then I think now she's back, that'll be, I don't think that's going to work. Yeah, I don't know. I have, annoyingly, got a couple of ideas that I'm thinking about. And the thing is, I'm not creative at all. I have no artistic bones in my body, so I really am just miming at a camera. That's about as creative as it gets. And I'm okay on a computer, so I can piece the video together fairly well. But I'm actually not creative at all. I mean, Instagram is my best friend because it makes me look a lot more creative than I am. But yeah, I don't know. It's all fun and games, isn't it? People think I'm an idiot. It's not there to win friends. It's there to make people laugh. And I enjoy it. It's funny, and you get a bit of banter back and forth. And yeah, and like you say, and actually a lot of it has come from I suppose self-confidence and a lot of it came from the trolling back in the day, so to speak, of my, basically I had a character assassination from random people about who I was and what I was, and that bothered me. Now it doesn't bother me, so I think whether going out of the way to show that it doesn't bother me is a good thing, or whether I'm maybe hiding it, I don't think I am. I'm pretty happy with looking like an idiot. And yeah, if it makes people laugh, all the better. Yeah. If it doesn't make people laugh, and people come wondering if I'm okay, then you know I might get to chat to somebody as well. So it's fun. It's going to be a bit of fun.
I think you make a hell of a lot of people laugh, and as you say, there's a lot of bad stuff going on in the world at the moment. So long may you continue with it. May you continue. So.
I might develop a conscience at some point, and I lost my dignity so long ago that actually it doesn't even matter anymore.
So you mentioned the confidence there and connecting with people. You did Open Farm Sunday on your farm last year, didn't you?
Yes, we did. That's exactly the same reason for the TV stuff, the social media stuff. In my mind, it all links together in showcasing agriculture to the wider audience. And Open Farm Sunday is just such a fantastic initiative. And Leaf, who are behind it, they're so supportive, and they've got so, you know, they've been doing it for 11 years now, so they know what they're on about, and they've got so many good ideas. And I'd always wanted to do it, and I'd always been worried that we're an arable farm. Open Farm Sunday is in June. The lambs are all a bit big, so they're not cute anymore. The crops are growing, so that's not much fun. So I'd always worried that we didn't have enough going on, enough to show. Yeah. And after doing it now, I was persuaded. A friend of, well, actually, you know, my wife's maid of honor, Alice Midmer, she works for Leaf, and she persuaded me to go and have a go at it. And I have never been so wrong by assuming that people wouldn't want to come to an arable farm in the middle of June. It was fascinating. People just, it was very family oriented, lots of kids, and we put on different bits and bobs, and had the drone out and flying that and showing the GPS accuracy and had machinery, and we had pigs and some cows from next door, and we had there's lambs as well, and mum was showing that how to age sheep and all the rest of it, and we put all these different bits on, and then we had a pile of about 7 ton of wheat left in one of the grain store, and actually I could have taken away everything else because all these children were playing in this wheat for hours and hours and hours. It was just, it was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. And it was just, yeah, I think we had about 400 people, which far exceeded what we thought we'd have. I thought we'd have sort of maybe a couple of hundred.
Yeah.
We had amazing weather, but it was just lovely to get people on the farm. We had a walk around the farm and all the rest of it. And it was just, yeah, really nice to get people out. And it's also nice for, I don't know, you know, parents with their kids to have a free day out for a Sunday. And a fantastic initiative, which we're hoping to do again next year, especially now if we've got the horses as well. It'd be another sort of string to the bow. Hoping to do it again next year. I'd like to do it either biannually or one in three, just to, you know, just so we've got a bit of a change from the year before. But there's enough to see and different people to come along. It's just, I can't rave about the initiative, and I would encourage anybody, even if they're like me, that don't think there's enough going on. Or even if you do it slightly different, structure it and have it only, you know, only on application. It's just, I think it's a brilliant way to get people onto farm, to show them where the food comes from, and show them so that they, and it's not about preaching. It's certainly not about preaching. It's about being able to make so that they can make an educated decision when they're next shopping. And I think that's really, really important.
Yeah. It's all part of the connecting, isn't it? And the building bridges, as you say. That we have lost when you mentioned that the school children didn't know where the eggs came from. It's small steps, isn't it? If we can all keep doing these things and keep showing we have nothing to hide and being open to questions and open to communication, then I think it's going to be better for the whole industry, isn't it?
It's just trying to get rid of that get off my land, I'm a farmer image that potentially we have had in the past. And I think that's, I think it's vitally important.
Yeah.
We are custodians of a large part of the UK. And whilst, you know, there's reasons for people to not come on farm for health and safety and all the rest of it. And there's Farm Safety Week next week. If you could open it in a structured environment so that people can come and see, and like you said there, we're not hiding anything. There is nothing to hide. What we do is, in my opinion, some of the best in the world, and people should be able to come and see that.
Mm, absolutely. Well, because I've actually had similar thoughts myself. I mean, we're sort of fairly similar sized farm, and in that time of year, you know, we haven't got an awful lot going on. I've often thought, well, what could we possibly show people at that time of year? But you give me a bit of food for thought there, so. I would
100% encourage, but you've got the chickens as well, haven't you? But I'd say you've got to keep biosecurity.
Well,
it's
a bit of biosecurity
I think you would love it, and you'd be brilliant as well. I think I'd almost say it's one of those things that you have that everybody should try once, and there is a fair bit of work leading up to it, just to get everything safe and all the rest of it. I think it's well worth it. It was one of the best days I've had on the farm. Just seeing people like that.
Yeah. Okay. So I just one thing I did want to ask you about as well. I know you went to Africa a couple of years ago, didn't you, with Farm Africa, which goes back again to sort of getting out there and connecting with people. I mean, can you tell us a bit about that, please, Ali?
Yeah, that was an amazing experience. 2014, we went to Tanzania with Farm Africa to build beehives. And it was Matthew Naylor, who writes in the Farmers Weekly. He farms over in the East, and he put together a group of farmers and journalists. And there was eight of us that went out in the end. And there was an agronomist and took a few farmers and bits and bobs. It was to do with deforestation in Tanzania, I can't remember the figures now off the top of my head a few years ago, but terrifying amounts of deforestation. And they basically, we went out there to build beehives, which would then help by putting the beehives in the forest. It stops the trees being cut down. It gives them a source of income from honey. So I think we built 57 beehives in 2.5 days or something like that. And it was just a fascinating experience.
Yeah.
Just to see the agriculture out there and also the technology for that was probably my take home. You know, the people out there they're so friendly and they're intelligent and they're all master joiners and all bits and bobs, but they're living in a mud hut with a solar panel. Mm. Yet they've got mobile phones and they've got tablets. And so, you know, in your mind, you're there thinking, so you've got to go and get clean water out of a well. However, you've got access to Facebook. You've missed the good bits of technology and ended up with the not so good bits of technology. And it was just fascinating. It was an amazing, amazing experience. And we raised 50,000 pounds for Farm Africa in the end with the ball and all the rest of it. So it was, it was just an amazing experience. I'd always wanted to go to Africa and never been. And to have this opportunity was just an amazing experience. And something that I'd love to go back and visit the villages that we supplied our beehives to see if my nailing is still standing up after a few years, which would be interesting with some of them. But to see how they're developing, because they are developing at quite a rate. I find it fascinating. You know, they've got 3G everywhere, but they are still relying on a sort of solar panel attached to their mud hut. So it's just. It's amazing. Yeah, it was amazing for me, and being fairly sheltered in Herefordshire and not having travelled a lot, it was really eye opening. Really, really eye opening.
Yeah, my first thought there was we haven't even got 3G in half the Welsh borders. So
yeah, I can see. Yeah. With your internet problems, that's it. Their mobile phone signal is well. Then you know, from their point of view, there is no landline, so. Mm. They missed the landline, went straight to the mobile. So their mobile signal is brilliant, absolutely fascinating. And that's what I mean, is that, you know, they've got data, but they maybe are missing the cash and the infrastructure to put in some of the other bits that are probably more important.
Yeah. Well, it must have been a fantastic experience. Yeah. Something I'd quite like to do myself, really. But wonderful thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Would again recommend getting involved with Farm Africa or another charity to go and do something like that. It was really, really good.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Well, it's absolutely flown by time. I was so looking forward to speaking to you, and it's really flown by. But what I do at the end of all these interviews, I ask five quick questions just to get to know you that little bit better. So if you're up for that, I'll fire away.
Yeah, carry on. Carry on. It's been great.
Okay, so what's your all-time favourite song?
My all-time favourite song is "Dancing in the Moonlight," Top Loader.
Oh, that's an interesting choice. Oh, a good one. I remember that from uni. Great song. Apart from
it is my happy song.
apart from water, yeah. If you could only drink one drink for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Coca-Cola. No questions asked. I can't live without the stuff. It's terrible. But I'm a totally, totally an athletic. I've had to cut myself back. I'm now on one can per day. But I was before that, I was drinking it far too much.
I think some of those videos are obviously fueled by a lot of sugar, I think, aren't they?
There's a lot of sugar and a lot of E-numbers involved in most of those videos. Yeah, absolutely. It's not alcohol. It's just pure sugar.
So if you could go out for dinner for a few hours with any one person, either living or dead, who would it be?
Oh God, that is an incredible question. I think it would have to be Nelson Mandela. It would have to be Nelson Mandela. I just think it's a bit.
That'd be some conversation.
It'd be an amazing experience.
I'd love to know what he would think of your Wrecking Ball video.
Oh God, I think I just want to sit there and listen and I just think it would be fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
Have you read Long Walk to Freedom? his book? It's I highly recommend.
No, I haven't. I haven't. It's on my list.
Highly
it is on my
recommend.
List, but I haven't got around to it
it's
yet.
Very good. Very. It's a big old book, but it's very, very readable. It's great.
Yeah, slightly daunting. I'm not a particularly good reader.
Okay. Well, as a lad who lives on the English side of the border, but who went to school in Wales, as you were saying earlier,
the right side of the border.
Well, we'll see. What's your favourite? what's your favourite Welsh Six Nations victory over England?
I tell you what, watching Scott Gibb score that try in 2001 was it 2001? I think it was 2001. Was probably the worst experience of mine. Right, that 1980 was the worst experience of my life. I remember. I will never forget the day that he just cut through that and scored in the court. And I just that moment knew that the rest of the spring term was going to be awful.
It was that is genuinely.
Especially if they had no chance of winning, they were never going to win ever.
It's genuinely my favourite sporting memory because we'd been absolutely hammered all the way through the '90s, and then. We obviously won that game. My grandmother, bless her soul, she was doing cartwheels around the living room.
I can imagine. It was heartbreaking. To be fair to Gibbsy, what a try! What a try! But just sat there going, I could not believe it. Not believe it.
Yeah. Okay. So finally, if you had to recommend a farmer or someone. In the agricultural industry to follow on social media to a non-farmer, who would it be and why?
If I had to, who do I really enjoy? I really enjoy Amanda Owen. She's Yorkshire Shepherdess, is that right?
She's
Yorkshire Shepherdess.
Great, isn't she? Yeah.
I just think her way of capturing. I mean, not that she needs any more followers; she's got thousands. Yeah. But her way of capturing the beauty of where she lives and all those children, and just they look like they have the best time. And I mean, I think she does it all herself, but she just is. Yeah, her photos just bring so much. They sort of capture so much more than just the image. I don't know how she takes them.
They're
beautiful. Yeah. They're absolutely beautiful, and they capture life and soul, and I mean they capture everything I wish I could capture in a photograph. They bring in I can't really describe it. I don't know. Yeah, they're probably not making any sense, but there's something so much more to it than just the photograph of the children on the pony or walking through with the chicken. Or it's just you feel like you're involved, and I think she's incredible, absolutely incredible.
Yeah, no, I think I couldn't agree more. Okay,
and obviously you'd obviously follow Will Evans as well because he's been very nice to me and he's going to edit this really really well and make me sound a lot more coherent than I am.
Does bribery
work or not? Is bribery still alive in 2017?
I will always accept a bribe, Ali. Always.
Brilliant.
Brilliant. Well, thanks so much for doing this tonight, Ali, and keep up the good work with everything you do. I love following you on Twitter because you're always so optimistic and upbeat, and I think that's the face that we need to show.
Well, as are you. Your stories about your kids are just they are hilarious, absolutely hilarious.
Well, we're just at the start of the summer holidays. We're just at the start of the summer holidays.
You've got 6 weeks of carnage.
Yeah, they won't be as hilarious by the end of the next 6 weeks.
We'll be counting down the days till school.
We will.
No, thank you very much. And congratulations on Rock and Roll Farming. It is brilliant. It is brilliant.
Well,
and,
thank you very
I think,
much.
Yeah, I think you're doing great things with it. So I look forward to seeing if you can manage to turn the ramble that I've just come up with into a coherent podcast. You'll be doing quite well.
No, it's been really enjoyable, and I'm really looking forward to seeing your progress on social media over the next years. Can't wait to see what this year's combine karaoke is going to be either. So there you go.
We'll see. All right.
And to everyone at home, thanks for listening, for the ongoing support and nice comments. Hugely appreciated. You can find the podcast from my Twitter page, at Will Penry Evans, Stitch, App, or iTunes. If you've got a minute and you're enjoying these, please can leave me a positive review on iTunes, help grow the podcast. And thank you to everyone who's done that lately. That's fantastic. Thanks again. I've been Will Evans. This has been Rock and Roll Farming. Thank you and good night.